Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks, the first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. This week, we finally have on the show with us the teaser that we had 2 weeks ago and unfortunately couldn't be with us last week. So we hope to make up for it this week with Dr. Jason and Mira Calton, authors of Rich Food, Poor Food, which we had you guys on the show once before talking about. It was awesome. I think my friend Amy told me that she stopped going to Starbucks after that show because she realized that they didn't have organic coffee. So thumbs up to you.
Awesome.
And your recently revised and newly released republication of Naked Calories, which is a book that I actually got when we went on a cruise together a couple of years ago, but no longer looks anything like it used to and has been recently updated and republished with a foreword by none other than Diane Sanfilippo of Balance Bites, who we also love on this podcast. So welcome, Jason and Mira, whom, before I forget, you can find at CaltonNutrition.com. And Monica will make sure to put all those links in the show notes for everybody. So welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having us.
Yes, it's great
we
to be
had,
back.
We had so much fun with you guys last time. So like we're like super excited to have you guys back.
Well, not only that, but I think, you know, unfortunately, when I met you guys, I just wasn't at a place in my journey to health to really understand the importance of micronutrients and health. And I'm kind of geeked out on that now. Like, I've realized that that is, like, the ultimate key to my health. And, like, the more that I work on refining that and the more that I work on digestion and cravings and those kinds of things, the better I function, the better I perform, the better I feel, the more healthy I am, the less inflammation I have and all these kinds of things. And so for me, I'm, like, super geeked out to talk today about kind of what Naked Calories is about and what you guys are the experts on, which is kind of really eating to fulfill the nutrient requirements that people have rather than kind of the macronutrient look that most diet books focus on. And I mean diet health, not diet
duration.
Right. But I think it was kind of the first time that I'd been introduced to that concept, and I wasn't at a place where I was ready to kind of hear it. But I've, you know, known you guys for a while, and and so I'm super geeked out to kind of share that aspect of you with everyone, and to have the opportunity to pick your brains on a few things of my own while you're on. So,
oh, goody! Yeah,
we're happy to hear that, and we can't wait.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think when people meet us, sometimes they're like, oh, they're going to talk about vitamins, and then we sit there and we're like, yeah, no, really, your health problem can be solved by it, and your health problem can be solved by it, and your health problem. And now I go, yeah, come on, you don't have like the same solution for everything. But really, when
you get a nutrient.
There's so many nutrients.
And, like, and you can have your very own, your vitamin D and your vitamin, your zinc and your, you know, it's just really cool. And we love it. I mean, we totally geek out to these little micronutrients. So we're stoked that you find a love for them.
Absolutely. So can you guys give us the elevator pitch for people who might not have heard the podcast before on kind of, I think it's an interesting story how you guys came to finding this as your platform of passion through Mira's health issues?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I'll put it in a nutshell this time. I know I did share it on the podcast. When I was 30, I was diagnosed with advanced osteoporosis, told I would be bedridden, told that I wasn't going to be and get any better with 80-year-old bones already at that point. They left very little hope and said that basically it was, you know, prescription drugs and by the way, you should take some calcium. And as I wasn't going to take the prescription drugs, all I was left with was take some calcium. So I started looking at it, and I started looking at, you know, what is it about this calcium stuff that I haven't been obviously taking before? And then I was like, ooh, there's magnesium about bones too, and vitamin D. And then I started getting a little overwhelmed, and I knew I needed someone who actually had studied this. So I found Jason, who was a doctor of nutrition already, and together we started looking at the micronutrients instead of the fats, carbs, and proteins. We started looking at the vitamins, minerals, and essential fats, and we slowly started building a plan for myself that's the exact same three-step plan that we teach in Naked Calories. It is food first, and supplements is actually third. There's drive down depletion in between, but it's the same exact plan in the book. And within 2 years, we reversed my osteoporosis. I've been back since. I do not have osteopenia. I do not have osteoporosis. And we just fell in love with the fact that we could actually reverse disease through this kind of supplementation.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big things is, you know, I kind of fell into the micronutrient world as well, because I was doing mostly diets for people coming into my clinic who wanted to lose weight or they wanted to sleep better. There was a couple medical problems, but on the whole, you know, people were trying to lose weight. So I was of the mind that diet or those macronutrients were really the most important thing. And after about 5, 6, 7 years, I would be putting people on these kind of micronutrient regimens, and I would notice that they would lose fat so much faster and their sleep patterns got better. And when they didn't get on the micronutrient regimen, those things didn't happen. And with Mira, it really just kind of held a mirror in front of my face and made me start to realize that those micronutrients may be a lot more important in the overall equation of creating optimal health and a healthy lifestyle than I ever gave them credit for. And I think a lot of nutritionists give them credit for. Now we're starting to hear it pop up everywhere. So they've got science, yeah, what vitamin D does for you when you want to balance your hormones, that they're detoxifiers, that they do help speed up your metabolism and they control your metabolism. And like you said, once you start digging deep into it, you start to realize that they play a role in literally every aspect of creating a healthy lifestyle.
That might be why we call them nutrients.
Exactly. And they're essential.
These are the micronutrients.
Essential micronutrients.
Well, I don't know, Sarah, if you want to mention it at all. I know that nutrients happens to be important for the autoimmune portion that we focus a lot on the show too. We have a lot of listeners with autoimmune conditions. And
yeah, it's actually where I start my book is with nutrient deficiencies that are correlated with autoimmune disease and where those nutrient deficiencies come from. And I start that long before I talk about leaky gut or gluten or nightshades or inflammatory foods or hormone regulation or anything. I start it with the correlations between nutrient deficiencies and dysregulated immune systems. And that's not just relevant for autoimmune disease. That's relevant for any inflammatory disease. It's relevant for asthma. It's relevant for allergies. And so that, I think, I mean, it's something that I've, in the research for my book, when I started delving into that side of the piece, I ended up completely rearranging my book because I really felt that the nutrient density of a diet had to be the first thing. And that for me became the most important part. So actually I'm kind of like right on the exact same page as Mira and Jason, because that's been, you know, the sort of take home message from my research, from, you know, solving health issues, but from a completely different focus, just focusing on autoimmune issues.
Right.
Cool. So you guys want to geek out about it a little bit?
Sure.
Ready for science with a trifecta this week?
Yeah.
Sure. Sounds great.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So for this week's Science with Sarah, I actually felt like we should probably do science with Mira and Jason, because I actually feel like this question is something that is their expertise and exactly up their alley. And I really feel like Mira and Jason could answer this question far, far better than I can. But it's something that I think is a question that a lot of people you know, have and would like to know more about. So Mir and Jason, if you guys are amenable to doing science with Mir and Jason this week, I was wondering if you guys could talk about how cravings relate to micronutrient deficiency. And specifically, I was wondering if you could explain how sugar and salt cravings, because I think those are like the most common cravings that people experience. You know, certainly for me, it's almost always sugar cravings. But I was wondering if you could explain how that relates to magnesium and calcium deficiency and how those, how indulging in those cravings can feed that vicious cycle.
Well, absolutely. And this is something we kind of are face to face with every single day because, you know, so many people go on a diet. And as we all know, pretty much all diets work in the short term. But what often happens is you lose the 20, 30 pounds or whatever it is that you have to lose, and you're doing great and you're going to work and all your people at the workplace are saying how great you look, and your husband or your wife is telling you and reinforcing that weight loss, and you bought a whole new wardrobe, and every single thing in your life is reinforcing the positivity of what you've created with this weight loss, until the food cravings get so intense that we can't stop them. We can't do anything about them unless we eat what it is that they're telling us to eat. And for many people, these are either the sugar, like you said, the sweet or the salty craving. So people kind of fall into one camp or another. Either they're like Mira, she's a sweet food person, or you're that person who'd rather have pasta and pizza. You're that salty food person. And what we found, and specifically researchers at the Philadelphia's Monell Chemical Sense Center have looked into this quite extensively, and they found that these cravings are due to, as you mentioned, specific micronutrient deficiencies. So they found that salt, or craving salt, is due to calcium deficiencies. So what happens is the sodium temporarily increases calcium in the blood by leaching the calcium from your bones. That tricks the body into thinking that calcium deficiency is over. However, while this temporarily satisfies the salt craving, the secreted bone calcium leads to, of course, you know, calcium deficiency and further salt craving. So it's kind of like a cycle, a vicious cycle. In animal studies, researchers found that animals were observed to devour table salt if they were deficient in calcium as well as potassium or iron. Now, with sugar cravings, they're similar. Studies show that deficiency in magnesium levels can induce a sugar craving. And of course, once we get the sugar, the cravings go away. But what really happens is when you grab a food with something sugary or something sweet, what happens is sugar is what we call an everyday micronutrient depleter, which we talk about in the book, an EMD. And so it blocks the absorption of certain essential micronutrients, two of which are magnesium and calcium. So you start to see how the whole picture kind of comes together. You crave something sugary, you eat it, the sugar blocks the absorption of the very minerals that cause the cravings in the first place, and it just kind of becomes like a dog chasing his tail. So that's kind of that's the short version of how all that kind of stuff happens. And if people are looking to reduce these cravings in their lives and be able to actually lose the weight and keep it off, it's imperative that they address these micronutrient deficiencies. And we've seen, I don't know how many, like just thousands of clients that we've worked with that have written in and said, you know, I cannot believe it. I used to have such intense food cravings, literally just eating the rich food, poor food diet, doing the three steps with micronutrient sufficiency. And within a week or two, these cravings that were like debilitating before were completely gone.
I actually can say firsthand, I mean, when I had osteoporosis, I think that at the time Swedish fish were one of my food groups. And it's true. I mean, I used to eat them constantly, and I didn't realize that it was just me craving sugar. And it was because of the calcium and magnesium deficiencies. I don't have those cravings anymore. I don't even eat sugar. So for me, I mean, it's really evident to me that, you know, it is those cravings from those deficiencies, and they've completely gone away from me.
You mean Swedish fish isn't its own food group?
I love the red dye combination with the sugar.
The only way you can make that better is with the salt of a Sour Patch Kid.
I mean, Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry to our listeners who are now craving those foods. You really want chicken liver mousse and bone broth. You do not.
There you go. That's what you're really craving.
Yeah, and food manufacturers have caught on to this, obviously. This is why you're seeing M&M's coming out with their pretzel, you know, the salty and sweet.
Chocolate covered pretzel.
Everything is going to salty and sweet, and it's going to be within the next year or two in the grocery store. Everything will be this way because they've realized that these two cravings are so interlinked. Because the sugar blocks both micronutrients, both cravings are, you know, are really set in motion when we eat these foods. And once we start it, it's almost impossible to stop unless you realize that it's a micronutrient deficiency and really work towards creating a sufficient level of these two micronutrients, which these are two of the most depleted micronutrients in America as well.
And magnesium certainly is not the easiest one to get from foods.
No.
No, most people are magnesium deficient, and that, I mean, as well as calcium deficient. But yeah, absolutely. And calcium is actually one of the ones most commonly found deficient in the paleo diet in our studies. So that's, you know, if people are finding themselves craving a lot of sugary and salty things, try to take the sugar out of the paleo diet a little bit and see if that helps.
Yeah. I mean, you can find magnesium. You know, people know that they can find magnesium in, you know, nuts and seeds, dark leafy vegetables, broccoli, bananas have quite a bit, milk, cheese, fish, shellfish. But 400 milligrams is basically the RDI for magnesium. And it's very, very difficult to have any kind of a varied diet and be getting the 400 milligrams of magnesium each and every day.
Unless you eat as much vegetable as I do.
Unless you might eat as much vegetable.
And as much bone broth as Stacy has.
Yes.
What I lack in raw veg, I make up for in bone broth.
I could eat at either of your houses. I'd be perfectly happy. We've been on the road so much, I think I'm lacking in both bone broth and in vegetables.
Yeah. It's tough to find good food when you're traveling, for sure.
Yes.
Cool. So I guess what would you recommend to someone? Like, what would be from
Maybe especially someone who's already following a fairly, you know, nutrient-dense diet. Because you still get that. People who are following you know, paleo diets or primal diets, and they're still dealing with those cravings.
Well, it's like me when I met you guys, right? Like, I had lost over 100 pounds. I was speaking at a paleo low-carb event about my success and, you know, that positive stuff, but yet at the same time, like, totally clueless as to the fact that I still had a long way to go in terms of continuing on my health journey. So I'm wondering, like, what could you guys have said to me to kind of like snap me out of it or make me have seen it sooner? And I don't know that you could have. I'm not personally like holding you accountable. I'm just
saying. Thanks. You know, failed the cruise.
No. That's not what I mean at all. I just mean, you know, there are some people who maybe just don't, they aren't there yet. And for those people, I'm wondering, you know, I know Rich Food, Poor Food did such a good job of kind of taking it to the level that I could share that book with someone like my parents or my grandparents that just aren't there yet, and really kind of laid it out in a smart and succinct way. Like, is there something to say or a better strategy or, you know, kind of a quick hit for someone that either isn't there yet or, like Sarah said, mentally isn't there yet? Like, they're on the journey, but they're just not getting that organ meat is not just something that we're all talking about doing, that actually we need to do it and for certain reasons. Or, you know, is it what not to eat instead of what to eat? Like, is there something?
It's both, really. It's both the things you just said. It's what not to eat, obviously the sugar. And that's one thing that we see creeping into a lot of the paleo recipes across the board more and more. So, you know, be weary of that. If you think that you're doing everything and you are reading other people's recipes and you're doing a lot of that, just be weary of that. You know, think to yourself, maybe this is one of the reasons I'm still craving so many foods. Is it maybe because I'm still giving myself a lot of sugar?
Yeah, another thing that a lot of people who eat what they consider to be a very healthy diet, and they are very healthy diets, but we have to remember things like phytates and oxalates. These are basically, again, these are micronutrient depleters that are in foods that we eat a lot. Things like nuts and seeds and sweet potatoes and spinach and collard greens and berries. These are all foods that are, you know, are considered to be very healthy and are found in paleo, primal, low carb, low, all kinds of different diets. But we have to realize that those two micronutrients we were talking about, calcium and magnesium, are depleted by both of these things. In fact, research shows that if phytates are not in your food, in your meal when you're eating, because it's not necessarily just in the food, it's in the meal, you'll absorb 60% more magnesium from that meal. But if you are eating something with phytic acid in it, then you're going to have that micronutrient depleted. And oxalates, a lot of times they don't realize that, you know, in a bag of spinach, you're looking at 160 milligrams of magnesium and 281 milligrams of calcium. But by the time those oxalates take their toll, you're only going to absorb 28 milligrams of that calcium and 104 milligrams of the magnesium. So it's not so much, again, it's not so much that you shouldn't be eating these things, but just be aware of them. If you're having them in meal after meal after meal and you're still seeing these cravings, you're probably going to want to get rid of the foods that contain these micronutrient depleters and see if you can't allow your body to absorb them a little bit more efficiently.
It's probably worth mentioning that low levels of phytic acid and oxalates have been shown to reduce the risk of cancer. And even high oxalate diets, but not super, like from vegetables, has been shown to reduce the risk of kidney disease and gout. So it's not avoiding them completely, but just making sure that they're not your sole, you know, plant food.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talk about that
in the book. We actually say how there's good and bad in absolutely everything. I mean, there's some great benefits to wine, but there's also, you know, drink too much of it and you're really going to hurt the lining of your stomach. So I mean, there's good and bad to all of these anti-nutrients. And we try to make that very clear in the book when we're going over each of them, why it might be good for you, as well as what it's done, what can happen if you make it a main food source.
Right. Yeah, we just try to break it down into a simple three-step approach. Really, when we've ourselves sat back and looked at and asked ourselves that same question, Stacey, you know, what can we do to really make people, what's that aha thing for them? What can we do to get them to try to create a micronutrient sufficient state? And it's difficult because it's not a simple thing. It's really, we got to look at our food. We have to, like what we all do, we really have to evaluate every bite that goes into our mouths. We have to, and oftentimes it's an argument the whole way with our loved ones or our family ones. Why are you eating all that? Isn't meat bad for you? Isn't fat bad? You know, every single thing that we do, we have to defend. And then on top of that, we have to say, well, now we want to make sure that not only are the foods pesticide free and GMO free, but we want to make sure that they're filled with as much micronutrients as possible. It is, you know, it's just a step. Do the best you can with that switching to rich and try to get as many micronutrients as you can. It's looking at your lifestyle. We're not asking you necessarily to change your lifestyle, but we do want you to be aware. Are you drinking alcohol every night?
Are you stressed out?
Yeah. I mean,
you work out a lot. I mean, it's hard work when you're over there doing CrossFit and stuff and people are sweating. And a lot of times they're not thinking that those are more micronutrients. You're losing more micronutrients. So you have to replenish. And that's one of the things. It's lots of small little changes that people need to make along the way. We try to make it, just like you said, with Rich Your Poor Food, really easy to follow, really succinct. That's what we try to do with our books. And so that anyone can read Naked Calories and understand the changes they need to make. Hell, we have in the back of every single chapter, we've got the footnotes, the cliff notes, I mean. So, I mean, basically anyone can figure out what we're telling them to do.
Right.
I'm going to go check it out and hope that it says more wine. That's what I took away from this whole conversation. I heard Mira say that wine has benefits and
it
everything
does.
Else just in one ear out the other.
Everyone gets a takeaway message all to themselves.
And because I work out so much, I must need extra wine. Kidding, everyone.
I see you're getting the hang of this whole three-step thing.
Yes, absolutely. I got it down now. Okay, so you guys want to tackle a couple of questions?
Sounds good.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Jessica from Nine Mile Falls in Washington. And Jessica writes, we are new to gluten-free, dairy-free paleo. I have felt very strongly about making the switch for a while, but until I found this podcast, your blogs, and a few others, I did not have the confidence to start. We are currently about 75% paleo. The kids are 90% gluten-free. I'm 100%. We are 100% dairy-free at this point also. We still eat red potatoes and rice products. Recently, I was talking to a family member who is celiac about recipe changes, and she urged me not to go gluten-free unless I had been tested positive for celiac disease. She said that there are vitamins that our bodies need, which are only found in foods with wheat gluten, and that she is seeing the effects of these deficiencies after 10 years of gluten-free. This is, of course, contradicting what I have been reading and hearing in the paleo community. Is there validity to this concern? If so, how can I be sure that each family member is getting exactly what they need in terms of vitamins and minerals, etc., while remaining gluten-free?
Okay, I just literally smacked myself in the forehead as you were reading that. And I say, I wish that the sister, or family member, whoever it was here so I could ask them, what vitamins? This is the question that I encourage everyone to read. I know you guys are going to answer this question, but the next time someone comes to you and says, but there's essential vitamins and minerals in wheat that can only be found in wheat products, which ones? Tell me. Because, okay, sorry.
No. You're right. The things found in wheat can be found in other foods, but if the question is, can going gluten-free cause micronutrient deficiencies? I'm going to have to say that usually yes. And I'm sorry to have to say that, but it's because people don't understand. Like, you already geeked out. You know you can find it in other places, but a lot of people don't have that knowledge yet. Anytime you eliminate a group of foods, you also eliminate the micronutrients that they carry in. And gluten-free foods are often low in calcium, vitamin D, iron, zinc, magnesium, and the B vitamins in studies. Now, in fact, when individuals following a gluten-free diet were studied, more than half of them were found to be deficient in both vitamin B6 and folic acid. So, if you should definitely make sure that you're either supplementing or finding these vitamins from another source if you are going to go gluten-free. Now, the second part of the statement was, I'm sensing that she thinks that just because she's on a primal or paleo, I guess for her, diet, it means that she's more sufficient than anyone else and shouldn't then worry about micronutrients. I kind of got a sense of that. And what we did is Stacey, everyone always said that to us. We've been saying that since we first heard Naked Calories. We heard, yes, but we're paleo, so we don't have to listen to what you're saying. And we're paleo. We know we're more sufficient than everyone. And so we decided, you know what? We probably thought that was true also. So what we did is we actually did the same exact study in the book that we already had, and we expanded it. So the study originally was 4 diet plans, taking all of their menus according to the book and to see how sufficient they were. Well, when we read the book this time, we decided to take Diane's Practical Paleo, as well as Mark Sisson, who's our publisher, Primal Blueprint, and we took their menus and we tested to see how close they came or how far superior they were and what they did better and what was the calorie intake. And, you know, we weren't surprised, but we kind of were. We weren't surprised that they actually came in to match the highest efficiency level. So they actually came in at 56% sufficient in their RDI, which matched the highest one. However, we were kind of surprised that they didn't beat anyone. They weren't any more sufficient than any other diet program.
I'm like,
I know, I'm sorry.
Is there bone broth and organ meats in those menu plans? What's the deal? Is it just because of the oxalates and the, like, what, What's
no, we didn't even take into effect the negatives, you know, like what you, like you're saying, we look at the micronutrient sufficiency in two ways, the addition, you know, so we look at the amount of micronutrients that are actually in the foods. So if we were looking at lettuce, or I mean spinach, for instance, we would give you the full 260 some milligrams of calcium. We're not even going to take into effect the oxalates. So we're not even looking at that. We don't do any of the subtraction. So this is just
this
what's
was based on the
possible.
Menu plans. This was based on their actual menu plans. Every single ingredient, including spices, everything down to the last like drop of anything. And, you know, they both got 56% RDI sufficient, which was the same percentage that I think the Best Life got. But here's a little bad news. I'm sorry to say, but it's the facts. Best Life actually matched that same percent sufficient with less calories being needed.
Right, so they only needed 1,800 calories to reach that 56%, whereas Primal Blueprint needed 1,911, and Practical Paleo needed 2,160. Now, this isn't a competition,
but
really, between diets. But what it does show is that even when we're eating, and of course, the other thing that we did is in the USDA's database, they have started to put in their grass-fed meats and cage-free eggs or pasture-raised eggs. And when they were available, we used those numbers as well, which theoretically are quite a bit higher than your typical farm-raised animals. So it did have some advantages. What it comes down to, and what the takeaway message here we want people to have is this. No matter, and she asked this, how do I make sure that my family is getting all the micronutrients or the vitamins and minerals that they need? And really the only way to do that, in our opinion, is to put in place our third step, which is proper supplementation. I mean, it doesn't really matter how good you think your diet is. There's always going to be days when it isn't perfect. I know that Mira and I strive very hard to create what we consider to be a very good diet when we're here at home, but we travel a week or two out of every single month. And when we're in hotels or we're on airplanes or it's not going to work. And it's the same way with people who have their family members. The meals change, the situations change, you're rushed, there's sporting events, there's skip meals. So if you really want to create a micronutrient sufficient state, it's our belief that you need all three of the steps, and the last step is the proper supplementation.
I'm like all busy reading the section in your book right now.
Oh, how funny. Yeah, no, I mean, we've really...
What this menu is that they recommend.
Yeah, we have the
menu. Yeah, no, we just randomly...
We have, like, exactly the menu that you used to calculate. And I'm interested to know what type of micronutrients these menus end up being deficient in. Because when I look at them, I mean, Stacey and I really eat snout to tail. We eat a lot of broth, we eat a lot of organ meat. And I mean, I eat crazy amounts of vegetables. I put vegetarians to shame. And so when I look at this, it's not really representative of how I eat, but it looks at the same time like fairly typical. So I'm kind of interested, you know, is it green, you know, things that you would find in green vegetables that are missing? Is it things that you would find in seafood that's missing, because there's no seafood represented in either of these particular sample menus?
Yeah, well, I think we noted in here that we looked at the big deficiencies that we saw were in calcium, chromium, and biotin. Those were three real big ones.
Seafood.
And I could get you...
I'm like, I just did a fist punch in the air. I wish we were on video because I'm taking chromium, and I know that my calcium's good with soup. I don't even know what that third thing is, but I'm like, all right, two of three ain't bad.
Biotin is a B vitamin.
Yeah.
It's in the B vitamin group, but it doesn't have a number like other
B
vitamins.
Do you have strong hair and nails?
Now I do. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that's what I mentioned earlier on in the show. Like, as I've really started kind of refining, and I was really, really, really anti-supplements, about 18 months ago, whenever the first Paleo FX was, where I met Diana Rogers, and I was explaining to her that I had like come to the conclusion that I had celiac disease and I didn't have a gallbladder anymore. And I was like, but it's great, I'm paleo, so everything's fine. And she looks at me, she's like, let's talk about things. Like, are they really fine? And she made me fill out like this 3-hour long questionnaire late at night, one night in the house that we were sharing. Like, I remember sitting there filling out the questionnaire as everybody else was having fun and drinking and whatever. And she looked at the results of the questionnaire. She's like, yeah, you need supplements. And she's like, and I could have told you you needed supplements before you needed to fill out this questionnaire, because you don't have a gallbladder. Therefore, you have to take bile, like, period, yeah. End of story. And so that really opened up my eyes to the fact that supplements aren't this, like, negative thing, and not everybody needs them. But not everybody can live a healthful life without them. And just incorporating digestive enzymes and ox bile into my diet made a huge difference in terms of my ability to properly digest food and therefore absorb nutrients. And the more that I did that, the less I had sugar cravings, the less I had kind of, you know, late night cravings is also a problem for me. Like my hormone cycle got regulated a bit more, and I could tell that it was a positive snowball rather than a negative, because it just snowballs, as we talked about earlier. So for me, part of that journey over the last year has been kind of, okay, what kind of lifestyle am I leading? What kind of things am I doing, and what do I need to kind of focus on? So I take a magnesium supplement. I take a chromium supplement. I take iterative vitamin D supplements, because I know that there's research on both ways, but for me, it makes the most sense. Like, just some days randomly, I'll take a vitamin D, or I'll take like a few vitamin D, if I haven't, you know, seen the sun or whatever. And then I take the ox bile and the HCL, and I drink bone broth almost every single day. And Sarah can tell you an exaggeration. And bone broth and organ meats are where I really see benefit. And so for me, I consider those food supplements. Like, I don't eat those foods because I'm like, oh yeah, you know what I want for dinner tonight? Liver gravy. Like, no one is saying that. I eat those foods because I think of them like a supplement. I think of them.
I say that.
Your own parade over there. But for me, it's like, you know, my skin is cleared up. My joints feel better. My skin, hair, nails, everything are clearly more happy, strong, you know, blah, 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 when I'm focusing on doing these things. And I can tell within 3 or 4 days of not having bone broth, I literally can see a difference and feel a difference, especially in my joints and my skin, like within 3 or 4 days. It's amazing for me. So I'm on the micronutrient bandwagon, but I'm happy to hear that the things that were most common for people to be missing out on are things that I am focusing on putting in to my diet, and that, you know, it's not to say that I can't do some more refinement, but that's what it's all about, right?
Well, absolutely. That's cool.
Yeah. Sounds like you're on a great path. Just for some fun information, if you're taking chromium, the one we kind of recommend taking is the chromium polynickenate. And there's also a picolinate, but the polynickenate is considered to be superior. So you may want to look into that. And we're, of course, just so everybody knows, we're also huge fans of bone broth. I mean, we spent, you know, as you know, Stacey and Sarah, we spent 7 years traveling and living with remote tribes around the world. And you know, we saw the way that their ancestral diets,
everything goes in.
They just created this unbelievable level of health for many of these remote areas that we stayed with, these tribes that we stayed with and studied in. And a level that it's just very hard to find here back here in America, even with all of our knowledge and all of our, you know, supposed knowledge in nutrition. So getting back as close to you can to an ancestral diet, we believe is by far the best way to be eating. And the Paleo Primal diets do an excellent job at advocating that.
The only thing that we would say is that because not everyone can get great quality meat yet, some people find it out of their price point. Some people just don't live in a city and can't get it all the time. There's numerous reasons why. Then obviously those different cuts that, you know, the offal and the, you know, the bone broth and stuff like that, we don't recommend that. Because it's just not healthy if the animal's not really healthy. So for those people, supplementation starts becoming more important.
Yeah.
So we actually did a show, was it 2 or 3 or 4 or 8 episodes ago, Sarah? I don't remember which one it was, where we had a question actually about would you recommend eating offal at all if you can't get it from a good source or not. And it was the first question we've ever had on the podcast where Sarah and I disagreed. And I disagreed because I just personally am with you on some organ meats. And then Sarah did a lot of research to make recommendations kind of overall and went through each organ individually about what has higher risks and what doesn't have higher risks. So I would just refer people. Monica will put a link in the show notes to that specific
question. And actually, I had a further back and forth with scientific references and the comments on the show notes on my site that might be interesting for people. It's a little bit of a heated back and forth, but it has scientific references and some summaries of some papers actually in those comments that I will probably at some point turn into a full blog post because I did a lot of research.
What are the lowest risk factors? Which cut of meat would be best?
Well, actually, what's really interesting is because what the major concern with organ meat is that that heavy metals are deposited preferentially in organ meat. And what research actually shows is that all heavy metals except for one, and I think it was cadmium, but I would have to go back and look at the papers again. So I'm not entirely sure I remember it correctly, but all of the heavy metals except for one in conventional meat, and they were looking at meat that were growing near like metallurgic plants, like crazy heavy metal. There was more heavy metal deposition in the muscle meat than there was in the organ meat. And so it actually, if you were going to be getting, I mean, what those studies support is if you were going to be getting suboptimal meat, that you would still be better off eating organ meat than muscle meat, beyond the fact that it's more nutrient dense, and especially when you eat things like kidney and liver, you're eating, you know, what those organs don't store toxins. They filter our body, but they don't actually store. They have chemical reactions, and then they excrete the toxins either into it either goes into the bile duct to get secreted, or it goes into the gallbladder to get secreted into the digestive tract for excretion, or it goes into the urine to be peed out. What those organs do store are the antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals that are required for those detoxifying chemical reactions. So you actually support detoxification in your body by consuming organ meat, even if it's conventional organ meat. So, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why conventional meat is suboptimal. But that, you know, the papers are actually showing that when you look at heavy metal deposition as a indicator of sort of pollution in meat, that organ meat may actually be safer than muscle meat. With the exception of, like, you know, there's like, you know, you look at four different heavy metals and three of them are heavier and or three of them are more concentrated in muscle meat, and one of them is more concentrated in organ meat. And different organs will sequester different metals differently. But, you know, when you look at the overall body of literature, it really kind of supports the fact that it would be more detrimental to your health to avoid organ meat because you can only afford conventional organ meat than it would be to eat it. I think that's the take home. You know, similar to avoiding fish because it might have mercury, well, then you're avoiding the selenium, which helps detoxify the mercury. So it's the same sort of argument, I think, with organ meat.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's
another thing we added actually into this book that wasn't in it before. We did a whole section now on all the different toxins. And that's another thing, because toxins are becoming so, obviously, everybody's are so, you know, over toxins right now. So basically we included that about which micronutrients detoxify from which heavy metal and where you're finding them and where you're coming into contact with them. So we added that in as well.
Oh, that's awesome. I get so many questions about that. Now I can just tell people to go read your book.
Awesome. Page 124.
Excellent. I will flip to it right now.
Cool.
Oh, I'm going to bookmark that. Holy smokes. Bookmarked with a with a paperclip. Didn't dog ear. That seemed disrespectful somehow. okay, so did we answer that question? Gluten. There are no nutrients in foods that contain glutens, with the exception of manganese that aren't more richly found in other foods. And manganese may be over-enriched in gluten-containing foods. And in fact, there is some preliminary research that is attributing autistic spectrum disorder to manganese toxicity.
Hmm.
I know, that one just totally blew my mind. I was like, whoa. What else can we say? I have a really great post on can gluten-free be healthy for kids, which really talks about not whether or not a gluten-free diet is versus a gluten-containing diet are inherently unhealthy, but what you replace those gluten-containing foods with making the difference. So that might be a good thing for people to go and read.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're going to be going gluten-free, just make sure that you don't, like you said, you don't replace those foods with just other junk
empty foods.
Yeah. Empty calories and naked calories.
Naked calories?
So, yeah. I should know that term.
Next question?
I think we can move on. The next question is from Lauren from Connecticut. I wanted to see if you have any advice for controlling hunger and cravings. I guess we've been talking about this a bit already. For as long as I can remember, I've been on a diet. I gained and lost the same 10 to 25 pounds over and over, and I'm so sick of it. I've done Weight Watchers a multitude of times and am always able to lose weight with the program, but I'm miserable and hungry. On top of feeling insecure in my own skin and having a range of sizes in my closet, I cannot seem to ever eat enough to control my hunger. I've tried the Whole30 and 21-day sugar detox, though I admit that I cheated on the Whole30 with some alcohol and never fully completed the detox. I got to day 10. I'm always hungry and find myself sometimes even eating out of boredom at my desk because I literally have no work to do, or because I have such an urge for a taste of something, whether it's sweet or salty or both. I always hear about people who are never hungry on the paleo diet, but I never seem to get to that point. I try and eat a lot of protein and fat throughout the day, but maybe I'm not getting enough. I usually eat 2 to 3 eggs for breakfast with coffee and coconut milk, dinner leftovers for lunch, and which usually consists of 3 to 5 ounces of a protein and vegetables. I'll usually have nuts as a snack, but I'm trying to cut them out because I think they might be giving me stomach aches. And dinner is usually 4 to 6 ounces of protein with roasted veggies and coconut oil and some kind of fat. I always want dessert, always, even if my belly is fully distended. I feel like I have some weird obsession with food that never goes away. Do you have any insight as to why I cannot seem to get full unless I overstuff myself to the point of being uncomfortable? I really want to be successful and get myself healthy again, but I'm getting discouraged with my constant hunger and excess weight. Thanks for all your help. I love this podcast and both of you.
Aw. I happen to personally think the solution to Lauren's problems, all of them, are just to come work pro bono for our website. If she's bored...
Really,
I've got plenty of work for her.
I hope Lauren's boss isn't listening in.
Maybe she could, you know, sneak it in while she's at her other job.
Yeah.
Do you want to start that one?
Poor Lauren. You know, we just look at this question and it's a textbook case of somebody who's just with massive micronutrient deficiencies. And the question itself, she's still focusing on that protein and fat. She's wondering, you know, I eat enough protein, I'm eating enough fat, but why isn't it anything happening to me? So again, that's just that trap that we all so many times get caught in of thinking it's the macronutrient equation that we need to manipulate somehow, maybe more vegetables or more carbs or more fat or more protein. But it's not probably going to be a manipulation of the macronutrients. It's going to be a creating a sufficient state in those micronutrients. It also sounds like her hormones are really probably out of control, like the ghrelin hormone, which, you know, stimulates hunger. Sounds like it's probably out of control. And the fact that she still eats cake when her stomach is full and distended probably is telling us that her leptin is also not being recognized by the brain. So those are a couple basic issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about this a lot. She needs to become sufficient. She said salty and sweet, but she said it right there, what we were talking about earlier. So I would definitely just go back to looking at both of those and then sleep patterns. In First for Women at Magazine, we actually just answered this exact same question. And it came down to the person that actually mentioned that they weren't sleeping well. So,
see, that's what I was going to say. I was going to be like, oh, whatever Amira and Jason say, I'm going to come back and say sleep. And you guys just took that from me.
Oh, we're so sorry. You can say it. Bring in the sleep. Come on.
Sleep
have a minute.
It's so important. It's so important. Yep.
Yeah, she strives. She says it in what Sarah didn't read. She strives to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and we've talked before about really striving 8 to 9 hours of sleep in,
or 10.
Yeah, but I would say what I would add is that she mentions in the first two paragraphs this diet, that diet, Weight Watchers, Whole 30, you know, 21-day sugar detox. That's a lot of like diet mentality to me. And I don't mean lifestyle. I mean dieting. Yeah. And I think for this individual, Lauren, right? For Lauren to be truly successful in whatever she's going to do, she needs to figure out how to make it long-term for her. And she needs to stop thinking about how do I lose 10 to 25 pounds? And she needs to start thinking about how do I get healthy? And I think that was the huge switch for me that I wasn't ready to hear when I met Jason and Mira, and they said that the spinach that I was eating at dinner was ruining the other foods that I was eating. And I was like, these people are crazy. but I think for me, I now realize that that is really the big difference, that it's, you know, it's not about how do I lose weight? It's how do I get healthy? And it's, I think I've published to the entire world a million times that this has been an emotional struggle for me, especially being a leader in the paleo movement, that like, you know, could I go on Weight Watchers secretly? Could I zone and could I lose weight and restrict myself of calories and nutrients and know that I was losing health because I wasn't sleeping or I wasn't doing whatever because it makes my hormones go out of whack or I wasn't going to get my period? Right. Could I hide all those things and then outwardly show that I'm healthy and lean and blah, blah, blah? Yeah, that'd be easy, but that's not healthy. And that's not, you know, what I want to have for myself. And it's difficult to be that. And so what I've tried to show people is like, if I can have this struggle in my life and be a leader in a movement where people are judging me, hundreds of thousands of people are judging me openly on the internet and oftentimes calling me names or, you know, whatever, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And I just really think when I read this question, I saw all the things that you guys are talking about, but for me, the emotional aspect of, you know, I tried a Whole 30, but I cheated. She said, though I admit that I cheated. And like, to me, that mentality just, I would say, really needs to be focused on, because I don't think that she can really get to even the micronutrient portion, which really relates to health, until she starts thinking about this as something health related and not just like, how do I lose 10 to 25 pounds, you know?
First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for your bravery and for giving us so much of yourself to this community and being so honest about the about everything that you've gone through. First of all, just thank you for that. I think that for her, she's looking at this as a diet, and we always say, you know, you can go on a diet, but you're just going to trade in for a smaller pant size, and you're going to end up getting a heart attack, or you're going to end up with worse vision or something else because you're not getting the micronutrients. You have to really just change your focus, like you said, and it has to be on just being a healthy person. I think for someone like her, it sounds like doing some journaling would be a great thing for her to do, just to literally not be on a diet, but just be journaling why she's eating, or is she hungry, or how she's feeling. You know, it's not really the hunger probably. Sometimes it's just the boredom, or I'm upset, or, you know, all these other things, just to, you know, get her a little bit more focused on why she's having the behaviors that she's having.
Yeah. I mean, we've been so brainwashed in America to believe that our answer is going to be found in that diet. Like you said, Stacey, I mean, we've been, you know, Weight Watchers and all these companies, they spend millions of dollars promoting the idea that all you got to do is just eat their prepackaged GMO full hormone infested, you know,
BPA laden
food, you know, food like substances, and it's all going to happen for you, and you're going to be so healthy and happy. And, you know, so I don't really blame the public, but it is time that we as nutritionists and leaders in these communities come out and say, that's all kind of a big lie. It's smoke and mirrors. It's that the objective isn't to lose weight. First of all, it's to lose fat. Secondly, it's not about just losing fat. It's about creating a healthy environment and a lifestyle that is what we call realistic and sustainable. If what you're doing is so hard that you have to quote unquote cheat on it, it's not realistic and sustainable. It's not a lifestyle. So, You know, and it's hard. It's hard for even us. We fight constantly with book publishers, you know, trying to get our message out and them saying simply, well, nobody cares about micronutrients. Nobody even knows what they are. Give us a diet or we're not publishing anything. And, you know, so it's a tough fight. But I think there is a tipping point happening in America. People are starting to realize that, it's, you know, it didn't work in the 80s. It didn't work in the 90s. It didn't work in the 2000s. It's not going to work now. Starvation is never going to lead to health in any way, shape or form. And so we have to really differentiate between these starvation diets and a healthy diet that's part of a healthy lifestyle.
I love that you called it starvation. That's my word. I use it all the time when I'm describing Weight Watchers, because I did Weight Watchers many times for many years. And I know for a fact what I did was a starvation diet. Like she said, I was hungry and I was miserable and I was less healthy on the other side, although I was thinner, you know? And so yes, I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I know. And that's a tough one. And I know how hard it is for people to say, well, but I just want to lose the 10 pounds. Then I'll worry about it.
Yeah,
then I'll get healthy. It never happens. It can't happen because that
you're sinking
diet,
yourself deeper in a hole first.
Yeah,
it's hard to get out.
It causes those micronutrient deficiencies that are – you can't fight against them. There's just no way. It's not like you're ever going to do a starvation diet and say, well, this time I magically wasn't deficient. And I want to say this too. Even if you supplement with a starvation diet, you are still likely going to have those micronutrient deficiencies. Just those diets do not work in any way, shape, or form.
Period.
Next
Sarah?
Question.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Our last question is from Janet from Naperville. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. Illinois. IL is Illinois, right?
Yes,
come on.
Ma'am.
Some American help me out here.
Yes.
Naperville is Illinois. It's right outside of Chicago.
Sweet. Okay. Now I know where it is even.
Sorry.
Okay. It's okay. Hey, this is how I learn my American geography.
This is like an ongoing battle because I know less about American geography than Sarah does. So she'd be like, is that near? I'm like, I don't know. It's like the one thing I openly admit, I really suck at geography.
I'm right there with you.
I'm learning.
I've only been there.
You know, it helps to have a first grader who is, she was teaching me about Benjamin Franklin last week. I was like, really? I didn't know he invented the odometer. I was like, this is really cool. So I'm like learning, because I'm going to have to do a citizenship exam in like 2 more years. So I'm like learning everything through my child who's like bringing it all home from school. It's awesome. Although I think it's like fifth grade. I'm working on it. Fifth grade curriculum that is going to be actually the stuff that I really need. So I might have to actually study some stuff anyway. All right. The question from Janet. That was a total aside. I'm sorry, Janet. Okay, Janet writes, a friend of mine who is vegetarian and always denouncing meat as evil. The latest thing she shared on Facebook was this article, and we'll put a link in the show notes, showing a relationship between red meat and stroke in males with a normal body mass index. For me, I don't think this is an issue because A, I'm a woman, and B, I don't process iron well. Even eating red meat as much as I do and taking an iron supplement, I was still having issues with serum iron levels, just barely above normal, and iron saturation, below normal. My doctor tripled my iron supplement to try to address this problem. I'll be going back in soon to do a follow-up blood test to see if the additional supplements have had any impact on my iron levels. So this study isn't going to do anything to my intake of red meat. However, I was wondering what you make of it and what it says about how much red meat men can and should eat. This question has a whole lot going in it.
Yeah. Well,
let's focus on her and her iron intake.
I don't really think it has anything to do with red meat. You know, I think it's looking at all sorts of meats, all sorts of proteins. I would really look more to the – and they talk a little bit about iron and the difference between heme iron and non-heme iron. And, of course, heme iron being found in animal sources, and that's because we talked about, I think, last time too, that comes from the hemoglobin. That's where they get that name. And that's, of course, blood, so you need an animal for that. So one of the things that I think people don't realize about meat and the iron in meat is that 30% of the iron in meat is heme iron – and, well, approximately 30 to 40%, and 60% is non-heme. So there's actually more non-heme iron in red meat and other types of meat than there is heme iron. However, since this is the only source, I think I would really probably look more towards the processed meats. I think that I read the study, and it looked to me like you could get – there was as much negativity associated with 50% of the processed meats as there was of just the pure meats tested. So that indicates to me that I think we're looking at, probably just
– all the crap in all the
junk in that processed meat. So there's going to be everything, right? So that meat's been probably raised in – an unnatural environment with unnatural feeds, GMOs, hormones, all kinds of junk. There's no argument. I'm a huge fan of red meat, or of all kinds of meat, but I'm also not a huge fan of the typical types of meat that come from factory farms. It's just a shame what happens with that. I understand exactly what you said, Sarah, is that, is it better to have, poor quality meat or not? And it is still better to get the meat in. But in this study, I don't think it has anything to do with the iron per se. I think it really has a lot more to do with just the impurities in the meat that was being tested.
And I just want to talk a little bit about the fact that she's tripling up on her iron. Just if, first of all, she needs to know that iron blocks the absorption of 10 different micronutrients. So we really hope she's making sure that she's getting enough of the other micronutrients and not taking them in anywhere close to that iron that she's taking in, because that's really going to lower her ability to become micronutrient sufficient. Also, if she's supplementing with iron and it's not really getting absorbed, obviously vitamin C is going to increase the uptake and the absorption. Again, take those together at a completely separate time. Like we said earlier, the phytates and the oxalates, both of those inhibit iron absorption, so she's going to want to limit those from her diet. And we just wanted to give her a few clues on how she can look at getting her iron up.
She should also check her vitamin A levels. If they're low, it may explain why her iron levels aren't increasing. So because vitamin A increases the absorption of iron, and a vitamin A deficiency can also cause anemia. Vitamin A also impacts the metabolism of iron, like the transport and production of red blood cells. So that's important. You should also be looking at
copper,
because sometimes an iron deficiency can really be a copper deficiency. Transport, and also, yep, Mira, that's correct. We got to also check vitamin B2 as well, because riboflavin is necessary for the absorption of iron. So, a lot of times our doctors say, you need more iron, but they may not understand fully the synergies that take place with the absorption and utilization of iron. And if she's tripled up on the iron and it still isn't working, that's a pretty good indicator
that it's not
an iron problem only. It's probably something to do more with its synergists.
So, Jason, because you read the red meat and stroke study, and I actually didn't go and read the original study, can you tell me if they corrected for vegetable intake?
I didn't see anything in there.
I don't believe so.
The reason why I ask is because there's this sort of new move in cancer nutrition research to correct for vegetable intake, because they have found that all of these sort of older studies that showed correlations between meat consumption and various forms of cancer, by the time you correct for vegetable intake, those correlations completely disappear. And there's actually a really interesting study that shows that the way that our gut cells metabolize heme, which of course is the culprit that this particular study is denouncing, that the way our gut cells metabolize heme is different if we have been consuming foods that contain chlorophyll versus foods that don't contain chlorophyll, which might be exactly why the correlations disappear when you start talking about people who are eating vegetables. And especially, we know that green vegetables are especially important for cancer prevention. And it looks as though the presence of chlorophyll actually prevents a particular chemical reaction happening within the gut cells that would, if you don't have that chlorophyll, metabolize heme into these sort of pro-inflammatory carcinogenic compounds. And if you have chlorophyll because you ate a salad with your steak, that you don't actually have those chemical reactions. So for me, it's always interesting. It's my first question when I see studies like this isn't, well, what was the quality of the meat? Did they include processed meat? What was, you know, it's never those types of questions. It's always, did they correct for vegetable intake?
Yeah. That's a great point.
I like geeking out with you.
Yeah.
I like learning something.
I'm a micronutrient geek too.
Yay.
Yeah. So we don't want anybody to be afraid of eating meat. I think that, you know,
start off with a good salad.
Yeah. No problem. Put in your green leafies in with it. And again, just be aware that the processed meats were really the ones found to be the worst. So
yeah, they were twice as likely to cause a problem than any other meat in the study. Just the processed meats. So pretty much there points his finger.
And for the synergistic factors for iron absorption, to get to the other part of the question. Do you guys have some whole food suggestions for where to get B2 and vitamin C and et cetera?
Vitamin C, red pepper. Yellow pepper is how much more? It's ridiculous how much is in. Throw away the orange and eat a yellow pepper. The amount of vitamin C in there is something
like 200 milligrams as opposed to 60 in an orange. So a lot of people, that's probably the unsung hero of vitamin C. If you want vitamin C, yellow peppers. Vitamin B2, of course.
I hate nightshades, Sarah, just by the way.
Yeah, I don't eat them either, but. Well, they cause me to have a flare of my autoimmune disease. So.
No, that's the thing is I really love them, which is why I hate them. Because I would love to be able to snack on sweet bell peppers at lunch, which is what I used to snack on because it was like, I don't want to say it was like candy.
It is. It's very similar to candy.
It replaced Snicker bars for me, and I can't have them anymore. And when I hear about how much vitamins and minerals like tomatoes and peppers have in them, I just want to like...
What kind of a response do you have? Just out of curiosity.
What do you mean? Like, it depends on what the question is.
No, like what kind of physical response do you have? Oh, what do you notice first?
Joint pain and skin flares are the worst for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually have a autoimmune disease that's a skin condition. So I will get especially tomatoes and hot peppers are the worst. And probably just because of the specific glycoalkaloids that are in them. But I basically have a flare, so I'll get new lesions. They're very, very painful. They're very, very itchy. And then I'll have full body aches and joint pain. And usually, you know, acne and dry skin. It's crazy. It's insane. And I tolerate accidental gluten exposure better than I tolerate accidental tomato exposure.
Oh,
wow.
What's interesting, though, just complete aside, is that for me, I didn't even realize that those foods were causing those problems. And I think because like gluten is in everything, right? Like gluten, high fructose corn syrup, well, corn in general, corn, soy, and gluten, you don't even realize what it's doing to you because it's in everything you eat. So you just always feel that way. That's how it was when we switched to nightshades. And I think, Sarah, you said that you had the same problem too, because you just start, like we ate a lot of ground meat things that had tomato sauce. We ate tomato sauce because it was so easy and it was easy to throw together like spaghetti squash, tomato sauce, and ground meat. It took 10, 15 minutes, like whatever. And nightshades are in almost every
if a label says spices, it is almost definitely paprika. Yeah. And it is so hard to get.
MSG.
Yeah.
Steve's paleo kits, for example, are really good option for people, but not if you're on an autoimmune.
All of his jerky.
Yeah.
It's nice things.
It's so sad.
Every single version of his jerkies has nightshades, unfortunately.
Well, some good news for all the paleo people out there.
I'm sorry, Debbie Downers.
You can get your vitamin C, your riboflavin, and your vitamin A all from liver.
Yes.
Yeah. fried chicken. One of the highest sources.
Liver so dance.
Liver is the number one source for vitamin B2. It's also the number one source for vitamin A. In fact, polar bear liver contains more than 100,000 IU of vitamin A per ounce.
I've never.
I just ate that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean that's you know.
Which kind of bear did we have?
And if it's pasture raised polar bear, then it has vitamin D too.
I'm gonna guess it's pasture raised.
What was that crazy thing that we brought up that one time, Sarah? It was sea lion kidney,
wasn't it?
Sea lion kidney. It was like the most nutrient food.
It was the densest tryptophan content of any food, wasn't it? Tryptophan?
I don't know. We come up with some random stuff.
Well, next time I see one, I'm going to make sure to try it.
You let us know when you find sea lion kidney or polar bear liver, and we'll give you a high five.
You know, if you live in like Alaska or the Northern Territories of Canada, it's not that strange of a food.
No.
I'm sure there's like Northern European countries Scandinavian countries where you can get them too.
We had a lot of black bear when we were in
Russia
and Norway places.
We used to eat bear when I was a kid, but only because my uncle lived in the boonies and when bears would decide to try and attack his dog, he would kill them and then we would eat them.
Dinner.
Hey, at least got a good meal out of it.
Yeah, we got many good meals out of those bears. I remember not actually liking bear meat all that much.
Yeah, we had bear heart, I think, quite a few times when we were traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Sorry, that's the
really good
organ meat geek in me right there.
Mm. As we all should be.
We're trying, guys.
We're spreading the organ meat love
every time we can. So,
well, we are there with you.
Yeah, I had somebody post on my Facebook page the other day that they finally broke down and tried a recipe that I'd given them a while back for liver meatloaf. And she said that everybody loved it. And I was like so excited because I was like, see, I've been trying to get you to do this for like a year. And yeah, everybody loved it. So I was stoked.
Another convert almost every day, unless I eat kidney. And then I don't eat liver if I'm eating kidney typically. It's my breakfast almost every day.
Wow.
Yeah, she eats organ meats and raw veg, and I have soup. One of us is more sane than the other.
My breakfast is usually, it's actually not even just raw. It's usually homemade fermented vegetables and organ meat. That's how I start my day.
Mm.
Half a grapefruit and a cup of tea.
See, they don't serve that at the Ritz-Carlton.
Or the Marriott that we were at last week. Yeah, no, we've been at these conventions. So right now we're definitely in need of some good home cooked food for the next week. We're very excited.
Cool. Well, you guys enjoy being home for a while. Thank you for coming back onto the podcast. Sorry about your travel woes last week. We're sorry.
Absolutely. We apologize for that.
No, we understand. We've all been there at some point. But it was great to have you back on the show. Awesome as usual. And we wish you guys tons of success with your newly launched book, Naked Calories, which I think we've talked a lot about tonight, everybody. If you're looking for more information on that 3-step program or on a lot of the things that we talked about tonight, that's where you would find it. And then Jason and Mira's first book, Rich Food, Poor Food, is also a really good resource. I personally recommend it for people in your life who just need a cut to the chase, give me the answer kind of book. And that's not to say that it's not more useful, that it's not useful to more people than that, but that's how I use it. It's like, here, you want the answers? Here you go. Here's the easy way.
Exactly. GPS to go grocery shopping.
Yes. And you can always find them at CaltonNutrition.com. And anything else I missed, guys?
No,
I think you covered everything. If people do want to find out where they may be falling on the micronutrient sufficiency deficiency spectrum, they can go to the website on the main page. We've got a free quiz right there. They can take it and it will give them a snapshot of where they may be falling based on our 3 steps to micronutrient sufficiency. So I recommend people do that if they're interested at all.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. It's 20 minutes, I'm telling you.
Do you have questions about having like liver and kidney and homemade sauerkraut for breakfast on there?
I don't know. I don't remember.
See, if that was in your meal plan, it'd boost your numbers a lot.
Exactly. You guys should do some
meal plan from my book, and we should like calculate it. That would be awesome.
We should.
We would love to.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to cut everybody off. And I'm
okay. Okay.
See, talk to the audience. We'll be back again next week. We have no grandiose plans or anybody to tease you with that, of course, we would then probably come into snafu with because that's been the case. Not just you guys. It's been just how we've been rolling lately.
Yeah.
So it'll just be Sarah and I, and so that'll be interesting.
The awesomeness that is the two of you.
Just of us. We'll have to talk about something.
We'll pull it out. We always do. We'll be back again next week. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.